The Return of the King, Cassette 7.
Chapter 2. The Land of Shadow. Sam had just wits enough left to thrust the phial back into his breast. "Run, Mr. Frodo," he cried. "No, not that way. There's a sheer drop over the wall. Follow me." Down the road from the gate they fled. In 50 paces, with a swift bend around a jutting bastion of the cliff, it took them out of sight from the tower. They had escaped for the moment. Cowering back against the rock, they drew breath, and then they clutched at their hearts. Perching now on the wall, beside the ruined gate, the Nazgul sent out its deadly cries. All the cliffs echoed. In terror they stumbled on. Soon the road bent sharply eastward again, and exposed them for a dreadful moment to view from the tower. As they flitted across, they glanced back and saw the great black shape upon the battlement. Then they plunged down between high rock walls in a cutting that fell steeply to join the Morgul road. They came to the way-meeting. There was still no sign of orcs, nor of an answer to the cry of the Nazgul. But they knew that the silence would not last long. At any moment now the hunt would begin.
"This won't do, Sam," said Frodo. "If we were real orcs, we ought to be dashing back to the tower, not running away. The first enemy we meet will know us. We must get off this road somehow."
"But we can't," said Sam. "Not without wings." The eastern faces of the Efel Duath were sheer, falling in cliff and precipice to the black trough that lay between them and the inner ridge. A short way beyond the way-meeting, after another steep incline, a flying bridge of stone leapt over the chasm and bore the road across into the tumbled slopes and glens of the Morgai. With a desperate spurt, Frodo and Sam dashed along the bridge, but they had hardly reached its further end when they heard the hue and cry begin. Away behind them, now high above on the mountainside, loomed the tower of Kirith Ungol, its stones glowing dully. Suddenly its harsh bell clanged again, and then broke into a shattering peal. Horns sounded, and now from beyond the bridge end came answering cries. Down in the dark trough, cut off from the dying glare of Orrid ruin, Frodo and Sam could not see ahead, but already they heard the tramp of iron-shod feet, and upon the road there rang the swift clatter of hooves.
"Quick, Sam, over we go," cried Frodo.
They scrambled on to the low parapet of the bridge. Fortunately, there was no longer any dreadful drop into the gulf, for the slopes of the Morgai had already risen almost to the level of the road, but it was too dark for them to guess the depth of the fall.
"Well, here goes, Mr. Frodo," said Sam. "Good bye."
He let go. Frodo followed, and even as they fell, they heard the rush of horsemen sweeping over the bridge and the rattle of orc feet running up behind. But Sam would have laughed if he had dared. Half fearing a breaking plunge down onto unseen rocks, the hobbits landed, in a drop of no more than a dozen feet, with a thud and a crunch into the last thing that they had expected, a tangle of thorny bushes. There Sam lay still, softly sucking a scratched hand. When the sound of hoof and foot had passed, he ventured a whisper.
"Bless me, Mr. Frodo, but I didn't know as anything grew in Mordor. But if I had a known, this is just what I'd have looked for. These thorns must be a foot long by the feel of them. They've stuck through everything I've got on. Wish I'd have put that mail shirt on."
"Orc mail doesn't keep these thorns out," said Frodo. "Not even a leather jerkin is any good." They had a struggle to get out of the thicket. The thorns and briars were as tough as wire and as clinging as claws. Their cloaks were rent and tattered before they broke free at last.
"Now down we go, Sam," Frodo whispered. "Down into the valley quick, and then turn northward as soon as ever we can."
Day was coming again in the world outside, and far beyond the glooms of Mordor the sun was climbing over the eastern rim of Middle-earth. But here all was still dark as night. The mountain smouldered and its fires went out. The glare faded from the cliffs.
The easterly wind that had been blowing ever since they left Ithilien now seemed dead. Slowly and painfully they clambered down, groping, stumbling, scrambling among the rock and briar and dead wood in the blind shadows, down and down until they could go no further. At length they stopped and sat side by side, their backs against a boulder. Both were sweating. "If Shagrat himself was to offer me a glass of water, I'd shake his hand," said Sam.
"Don't say such things," said Frodo. "It only makes it worse."
Then he stretched himself out, dizzy and weary, and he spoke no more for a while. At last, with a struggle, he got up again. To his amazement, he found that Sam was asleep.
"Wake up, Sam," he said. "Come on. It's time we made another effort."
Sam scrambled to his feet.
"Well, I never," he said. "I must have dropped off. It's a long time, Mr. Frodo, since I had a proper sleep, and my eyes just closed down on their own."
Frodo now led the way, northward as near as he could guess, among the stones and boulders lying thick at the bottom of the great ravine. But presently he stopped again. "It's no good, Sam," he said. "I can't manage it. This mail shirt, I mean, not in my present state. Even my mithril coat seemed heavy when I was tired. This is far heavier. And what's the use of it? We shan't win through by fighting."
"But we may have some to do," said Sam. "And there's knives and stray arrows. That Gollum isn't dead for one thing. I don't like to think of you with naught but a bit of leather between you and a stab in the dark."
"Look here, Sam, dear lad," said Frodo. "I'm tired, weary. I haven't a hope left. But I have to go on trying to get to the mountain as long as I can move. The ring is enough. This extra weight is killing me. It must go. But don't think I'm ungrateful. I hate to think of the foul work you must have had among the bodies to find it for me."
"Don't talk about it, Mr. Frodo, bless you. I'd carry you on my back if I could."
"Let it go, then."
Frodo laid aside his cloak and took off the orc mail and flung it away. He shivered a little.
"What I really need is something warm," he said. "It's gone cold, or else I've caught a chill."
"You can have my cloak, Mr. Frodo," said Sam. He unslung his pack and took out the elven cloak. "How's this, Mr. Frodo?" he said. "You wrap that orc rag close round you and put the belt outside it. Then this can go over all. It don't look quite orc fashion, but it'll keep you warmer, and I dare say it'll keep you from harm better than any other gear. It was made by the lady."
Frodo took the cloak and fastened the brooch.
"That's better," he said. "I feel much lighter. I can go on now. But this blind dark seems to be getting into my heart. As I lay in prison, Sam, I tried to remember the Brandywine and Woody End and the water running through the mill at Hobbiton, but I can't see them now."
"There now, Mr. Frodo, it's you that's talking of water this time," said Sam. "If only the lady could see us or hear us, I'd say to her, 'Your ladyship, all we want is light and water, just clean water and plain daylight, better than any jewels, begging your pardon.' But it's a long way to Lorien."
Sam sighed and waved his hands towards the heights of Ethel Duath, now only to be guessed as a deeper blackness against the black sky. They started off again. They had not gone far when Frodo paused.
"There's a black rider over us," he said. "I can feel it. We'd better keep still for a while."
Crouched under a great boulder, they sat facing back westward and did not speak for some time. Then Frodo breathed a sigh of relief. "It's past," he said. They stood up, and then they both stared in wonder. Away to the left, southward, against a sky that was turning grey, the peaks and high ridges of the great range began to appear dark and black, visible shapes. Light was growing behind them. Slowly it crept towards the north. There was a battle far above in the high spaces of the air.
The billowing clouds of Mordor were being driven back, their edges tattering as a wind out of the living world came up and swept the fumes and smokes towards the dark land of their home. Under the lifting skirts of the dreary canopy, dim light leaked into Mordor like pale morning through the grimed window of a prison.
"Look at it, Mr. Frodo," said Sam. "Look at it. The wind's changed. Something's happening. He's not having it all his own way. His darkness is breaking up out in the world there. I wish I could see what's going on."
It was the morning of the 15th of March, and over the Vale of Anduin the sun was rising above the eastern shadow, and the southwest wind was blowing. Theoden lay dying on the Pelennor fields. As Frodo and Sam stood and gazed, the rim of light spread all along the line of Ethelduath, and then they saw a shape, moving at a great speed out of the west, at first only a black speck against the glimmering strip above the mountaintops, but growing, until it plunged like a bolt into the dark canopy and passed high above them. As it went, it sent out a long, shrill cry, the voice of the Nazgul. But this cry no longer held any terror for them. It was a cry of woe and dismay, ill tidings for the Dark Tower. The Lord of the Ring Wraiths had met his doom.
"What did I tell you? Something's happening," cried Sam. "The war's going well," said Shagrat. But Gorbag, he wasn't so sure. And he was right there, too. "Things are looking up, Mr. Frodo. Haven't you got some hope now?"
"Well, no. Not much, Sam," Frodo sighed. "That's away beyond the mountains. We're going east, not west. And I'm so tired. And the ring is so heavy, Sam. And I begin to see it in my mind all the time, like a great wheel of fire." Sam's quick spirits sank again at once. He looked at his master anxiously, and he took his hand.
"Come, Mr. Frodo," he said. "I've got one thing I wanted, a bit of light. Enough to help us, and yet I guess it's dangerous, too. Try a bit further, and then we'll lie close and have a rest. But take a morsel to eat now, a bit of the elves' food. It may hearten you."
Sharing a wafer of Lembas, and munching it as best they could with their parched mouths, Frodo and Sam plodded on. The light, though no more than a grey dusk, was now enough for them to see that they were deep in the valley between the mountains. It sloped up gently northward, and at its bottom went the bed of a now dry and withered stream. Beyond its stony course they saw a beaten path that wound its way under the feet of the westward cliffs. Had they known, they could have reached it quicker, for it was a track that left the main Morgul road at the western bridge end and went down by a long stair cut in the rock to the valley's bottom. It was used by patrols or by messengers going swiftly to lesser posts and strongholds north away, between Cirith Ungol and the narrows of Eisenmouth, the iron jaws of Carach Angren. It was perilous for the hobbits to use such a pass, but they needed speed, and Frodo felt that he could not face the toil of scrambling among the boulders or in the trackless glens of the Morgai. And he judged that northward was, maybe, the way that their hunters would least expect them to take. The road east to the plain, or the pass back westward, those they would first search most thoroughly. Only when he was well north of the tower did he mean to turn and seek for some way to take him east, east on the last desperate stage of his journey. So now they crossed the stony bed and took to the orc path, and for some time they marched along it. The cliffs at their left were overhung, and they could not be seen from above, but the path made many bends, and at each bend they gripped their sword hilts and went forward cautiously. The light grew no stronger, for Orodruin was still belching forth a great fume that, beaten upwards by the opposing airs, mounted higher and higher, until it reached a region above the wind and spread in an immeasurable roof, whose central pillar rose out of the shadows beyond their view. They had trudged for more than an hour when they heard a sound that brought them to a halt. Unbelievable, but unmistakable.
water trickling. Out of a gully on the left, so sharp and narrow that it looked as if the black cliff had been cloven by some huge axe, water came dripping down. The last remains, maybe, of some sweet rain gathered from sunlit seas, but ill-fated to fall at last upon the walls of the black land and wander fruitless down into the dust. Here it came out of the rock in a little falling streamlet, and flowed across the path, and turning south, ran away swiftly to be lost among the dead stones. Sam sprang towards it. "If ever I see the lady again, I'll tell her," he cried. "Light and now water." Then he stopped. "Let me drink first, Mr. Frodo," he said. "All right, but there's room enough for two." "I didn't mean that," said Sam. "I mean, if it's poisonous, or something that will show its badness quick, well, better me than you, master, if you understand me."
"I do. But I think we'll trust our luck together, Sam, or our blessing. Still, be careful now, if it's very cold."
The water was cool but not icy, and it had an unpleasant taste, at once bitter and oily, or so they would have said at home. Here it seemed beyond all praise, and beyond fear or prudence. They drank their fill, and Sam replenished his water bottle. After that, Frodo felt easier, and they went on for several miles, until the broadening of the road and the beginnings of a rough wall along its edge warned them that they were drawing near to another Orkhold.
"This is where we turn aside, Sam," said Frodo, "and we must turn east."
He sighed as he looked at the gloomy ridges across the valley. "I have just about enough strength left to find some hole away up there, and then I must rest a little." The river bed was now some way below the path. They scrambled down to it and began to cross it. To their surprise, they came upon dark pools fed by threads of water trickling down from some source higher up the valley. Upon its outer marges, under the westward mountains, Mordor was a dying land, but it was not yet dead. And here things still grew, harsh, twisted, bitter, struggling for life. In the glens of the Morgai, on the other side of the valley, low, scrubby trees lurked and clung. Coarse grey grass tussocks fought with the stones, and withered mosses crawled on them, and everywhere great writhing, tangled brambles sprawled. Some had long stabbing thorns, some hooked barbs that rent like knives. The sullen, shrivelled leaves of a past year hung on them, grating and rattling in the sad airs, but their maggot-ridden buds were only just opening. Flies, dun or grey or black, marked like orcs with a red eye-shaped blotch, buzzed and stung, and above the briar thickets clouds of hungry midges danced and reeled.
"Orc ear's no good," said Sam, waving his arms. "I wish I'd got an orc's hide."
At last Frodo could go no further. They had climbed up a narrow, shelving ravine, but they still had a long way to go before they could even come in sight of the last craggy ridge.
"I must rest now, Sam, and sleep if I can," said Frodo.
He looked about, but there seemed nowhere even for an animal to crawl into in this dismal country. At length, tired out, they slunk under a curtain of brambles that hung down like a mat over a low rock face. There they sat and made such a meal as they could. Keeping back the precious lembas for the evil days ahead, they ate the half of what remained in Sam's bag of Faramir's provision, some dried fruit and a small slip of cured meat, and they sipped some water. They had drunk again from the pools in the valley, but they were very thirsty again. There was a bitter tang in the air of Mordor that dried the mouth. When Sam thought of water, even his hopeful spirit quailed. Beyond the Morgai there was the dreadful plain of Gorgoroth to cross. "Now you go to sleep first, Mr. Frodo," he said. "It's getting dark again. I reckon this day is nearly over." Frodo sighed and was asleep almost before the words were spoken. Sam struggled with his own weariness, and he took Frodo's hand. And there he sat silent till deep night fell. Then at last, to keep himself awake,
He crawled from the hiding place and looked out. The land seemed full of creaking and cracking and sly noises, but there was no sound of voice or of foot. Far above the Efel Duath in the west, the night sky was still dim and pale. There, peeping among the cloud-rack above a dark tor high up in the mountains, Sam saw a white star twinkle for a while. The beauty of it smote his heart as he looked up out of the forsaken land, and hope returned to him. For like a shaft, clear and cold, the thought pierced him that in the end the shadow was only a small and passing thing. There was light and high beauty forever beyond its reach. His song in the tower had been defiance rather than hope, for then he was thinking of himself. Now, for a moment, his own fate, and even his master's, ceased to trouble him. He crawled back into the brambles and laid himself by Frodo's side, and putting away all fear, he cast himself into a deep, untroubled sleep. They woke together, hand in hand. Sam was almost fresh, ready for another day, but Frodo sighed. His sleep had been uneasy, full of dreams of fire,